Hey there, everybody. Welcome to episode 135 of Hacking Your Health Podcast. This week, we talk a little bit about what's going on in personal lives, a couple new PRs, mindset, but most importantly, we get into some of the latest research around GlyNAC, seems to be a superhuman supplement that really helps with regenerative functions around your mitochondria, as well as some other staple supplements that we would use, as well as the most important around when should we be taking these things as far as timing, pre-workout, pre-meals, fasted, you name it. We get into it in this podcast. So hope you like it and tune in for this awesome week's episode. Thank you all.
You know that there has had to have been some sacrifice, whether it's time or nutrition or whatever it is.
I'm recording myself talking about having a relationship with my chest.
I'm Ben Kenny.
I'm Dave Kennedy.
And this is Hacking Health Podcast.
Yo, welcome back to episode 135 with Ben and Dave on the Hacking Your Health Podcast. What's up, dude?
Oh, that was like so crisp and perfect. I can't even believe it. Like that
was almost
like
as if I hit a button and I had that pre-recorded. I did. That was legit. I promise.
I saw your lips moving. So really good at that, I guess.
It's AI. Have you not kept up with? You can just replace AI.
Falling high. It's just going so quick. So yeah.
What's going on, dude? You look very tan.
I am very tired today. So
no, not tired. Tan. You look tan.
Tan. Yeah. And tan. There's two things happening right now. So first and foremost, I'm going on a vacation in 2 weeks. We're going to the Honduras area, and so the whole family and kids. And I'm really excited because we're getting the kids scuba certified while they're out there.
Nice.
And so they're doing the e-learning classes right now. And my wife and I, Aaron, we've been scuba divers for like our whole lives. I've been scuba diving since I was like 12 years old. My dad used to always take me. He used to go like, if you could dive in Ohio, you can literally dive
anywhere. That's what I was thinking. I was like, what were you doing in Ohio?
Let me tell you, it's not great. Like visibility is like 1 foot. You're like, where's my dad at? He's been gone for like an hour or something. You know, like, you know, but then we used to do these quarries where you dive down. And there's an old rock quarry where they used to crush rocks and get rocks from the earth. And they hit this underground spring and it creates this massive pond or lake or whatever. And so it's cool because you can go underneath. There's like buses and trucks and like these buildings you can dive into. And a couple people died there one time, which isn't good. But, it was really cool experience for me as a kid. And I got Erin involved in it when we were in the military, when I lived in Hawaii. And she was terrified of, like, she's a swimmer. Like, she used to do, you know, swimming when she was a kid. But like the thought of like being underwater with like these air tanks and everything like terrified her. But she overcame it and did it. Which is a good lesson, you know, of, chase your fears or tackle your fears. And her and I did probably 500 dives while we were in Hawaii the last like 2 years that we were there. So we used to just like literally go off the beaches. There was this one spot, it's called the Firehouse in Hawaii. And you literally walk behind a firehouse and you jump off. And there's like these cliffs that you like dive into. It's really cool, beautiful and everything. And then my favorite story is there was a place that we used to go scuba diving, Electric Beach. And apparently it was the largest meth town right around the corner. Like camps, like tent cities. And they'd always say like, don't leave your belongings in your car. And I was like, that's why we're fine. And then we're like watching Dog the Bounty Hunter, like 5 years later, we're like, oh my God, like what are we doing there? Like, this is not a good area. We could have been murdered. But the funny story is Electric Beach was a power plant that would shoot warm water into these big tubes into the ocean. And created like a lot of good coral formations, but there would always be like dolphins and turtles and things like that. And one day we went past it and we didn't realize that the vents were on and the stream like shot us out a mile out to the ocean. Shit. And I was like, oh shit. So we surfaced and it took us like 2 hours to swim back. But as we're swimming back, like an hour into it, we're exhausted and we see like this shark fin coming towards us. I'm like, oh shit. You know, so I get my little knife out, this little tiny knife that's gonna do absolutely nothing to a shark. I'm like, I'm ready. Let's go, shark. And I come down. It's actually a school of dolphins. And they hung out with us the entire hour back to make sure we got back, you know, to shore safely. And they were like chilling with us. I got to pet them. It was like the coolest experience ever. So can't wait for my kids to not experience that situation, but, you know, to be able to do more of a controlled environment while we go out there and die.
Can't wait for my kids to get lost at sea a mile out.
Yes, yes. Kids, you're on your own. If you make it back, you're now adults. So
yeah. It is. I've only ever been scuba diving once, but it was in Brazil actually. And number one, I will caveat this was in. I was extremely hungover, or potentially still drunk. And yes, it is definitely a difficult experience to get your head around of the whole breathing situation. Like, it is a lot to overcome. I would not recommend doing with a hangover.
Yeah, it's interesting. So you take what you learn from our breathing techniques, and you know, even like what DDP was talking about, and everybody else, you know, and everything, obviously with the 555 and Sean, you know, controlling your situation and your breath is really important as you're diving as well. And you can either like suck through, like when I first started diving, I'd suck through like a whole tank in like a half hour, right? You know, but you control your breathing, you know, calm, collective, not struggling, trying to keep your buoyancy there. So you're not like, you know, causing a lot of endurance, and you can literally be down there for like an hour, hour and a half, you know, on a tank, you know, with just some controlled breathing. And by the way, feel a lot better. You're not exhausted as you get through, which is not the case today, because I decided I went to Orange Theory, and it was the PR day today for, they call them benchmark days for the 1 mile run. And Aaron's like, hey, it's the 1 mile run. Do you want to go? I'm like, well, yeah, I'm going to go, but I'm not going to try to PR today. Like, I just don't feel it, you know? And so I get there and like, I'll just start at 12. And then my goal is I want to get to 3 minutes, and then I'll drop down to like an 8 or 9 and just chill the rest of the way and get like 6 or something like that. And I'm running, and I get to the 3 minute mark. I'm like, you know what? F it. I'm just going to do the 5 minutes. Like, just screw it. And I just went, and like, by the time I, you know, it's funny, because like, the mind games we can play with our heads is insane. Because if you think of it, the way that my mind works, and I don't know if anybody else does this, but like, I look at 5 minutes as 5 1-minute blocks. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I'm like, okay, sprint for 1 minute, recap yourself. Where are we at? Okay. I have 4 left. Okay. Hey, go. I have 3 left. Okay. I have 2 left. I'm already over halfway. You already did this. You can do 2 more. Really? Like, you're really complaining about 2 more minutes. You just did 3. You're already past that point. So like, you know, my mind breaks things down into, and I was even thinking of like, you know, 10, 30 second sprints, right? You know, so I'm like 30 seconds, 9. I'm like, well, 9 is too big of a number. Screw that. So then I went down to the 5-1.
9 is too many. I'm done. I'm like,
go back to the minute thing. Cause I'm going to quit. So it's like, you know, kind of getting in your own head around, you know, talking yourself into it. And it was really cool today, Joe, the instructor, he got into this little thing about Navy SEAL training. And he was saying that in Navy SEALs, if you quit, you can go and ring a bell and you're out. Okay, that's like that's a sign of like, hey, I'm done. I can't take this anymore. And I guess statistically, if you ring the bell, you can go and try the Navy SEAL training again anytime you want to. But I guess statistically, if you ring the bell, it's been 100% failure rate after that for people that have tried it again, because they know the bell's there. And it's the ones that get in their own heads that, you know, that are successful, because they have the persistence of that bell doesn't exist, right? There's no chance of me in that bell. I just got to suck it up and get through it. And after this, you know, I'm going to be a Navy SEAL, right? And I'm not saying I'm doing Navy SEAL training or comparing myself to that in any way, shape, or form. Although 5 minute mile, I feel like I'm pretty much up there, you know, at this point. But, you know, especially with airsoft, like I'm pretty amazing at combat now with airsoft. And, although I have all these welts all over me, I think the intent is to not get shot. Even
so, yeah, from the photo you sent me, I don't think you're very good. I mean, I don't know what everybody else looks like, but I can see what you look like.
I think I'm not doing so well at airsoft with all the bruises that I have all over my body and the bleeding and everything else. But no, it's all a mind game, you know. And that's the biggest thing, I think, you know, that helps me out a lot, is even when I'm not feeling it, just say I don't really have an option to quit, or break this up into something that I can do in my head, right? If you just look at the whole 5 minutes of running at 12, that seems like a lot. But 1 minute sprints 5 times, for some reason, works better for me in my mind to be able to accomplish that. And that's something that really helped me out today with overcoming that. And just, you know, I could have taken the easy way. I'm like, hey, I'm just going to run like a 6:30, which is great. You know, 6:30 is great for a mile, right? It's not 5 minutes. So, you know, it's just so good.
Well, I will say that that's obviously something that can transfer over to pretty much anything. Like, when you have a big task, break it down into smaller tasks. Like, how the fuck am I going to climb the mountain? Just take one step, et cetera, et cetera. So that's definitely something that we used. My question is, because it's on a treadmill, obviously you're limited to the speed. So is that literally the fastest? If 12 is the fastest speed the treadmill goes, you physically cannot run it any faster?
Cannot. Well, so they have new Orange Theory treadmills that go up to, I think, 14 or 15. Okay. But they're not at our facility, which is great, because I don't want to do
it. You're saying that there's other people in Orange Theory that do it faster than you? I'm only asking because people will want to know. I'm just saying that is there other people at Orange Theory that will do it faster than you? Because that's what the people want to know.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. So, but here's the funny part. So they have them at the Akron facility, which is only like a 20-minute drive. So I'm actually contemplating. So think about this. I don't know what a 15-mile-per-hour run for 1 mile is, but I'm assuming it's like 3:30 or 4 minutes. Like, that's only 4 1-minute blocks that I have to do. It's easier. I'm like, get me on the 15. Let's see if I can do this, because it's only 4 minutes. I can do that. So I'm probably gonna die, but you know, like I did a 15 mile per hour treadmill at Orange Theory when I was in like North Carolina, and it's fast. I did it for like a minute, and I was like, oh my god, like this is horrible. Like 3 miles per hour is a big difference when it comes to like 12 and 15. But actually, what I did today to make it a little bit harder, because again in my head I said I'm only gonna get to the 3 minute mark, so I need to make it harder. Ran it barefoot with like needles on me.
Weighted vest on?
Yeah, a weighted vest.
On fire.
I did a 2% elevation instead of a 1% elevation or incline. So I actually did it with, so this is a new PR for me today, actually. So five minute mile, I always did it on a 1% incline. I did it on a 2% incline today. Was able to still complete it, which I thought was really cool.
Okay. Let me know when you catch up with everybody else who's doing it, you know, actually fast.
The next one, I'll probably go to the Akron to see if I can do like a 13 or 14. Of course, we'll do 15, but you know, let's see if I can. Yeah. See if I can get under 5 minutes. If I can do like 4:30, then I beat my PR before and I have something to shoot for 15. But if I max out at 15, then I'm going to be like, well, I have nowhere else to go. Like,
well,
I
need, you can just
go to 20.
You can just run without a treadmill and you control the speed.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. I don't like running without a treadmill because I can't see. You know, it's like, it's a mind game thing, right? You know,
maybe Vision Pro. This is it. So you're doing a full circle here. You're going to run outside because that you can control the speed, but Vision Pro with a treadmill. Yeah, Vision Pro. With a picture of a treadmill. So you think you're rich.
I'm browsing YouTube and checking out like my Twitter account while I'm running, you know, at a 20-mile
speed. What a time to be alive.
So good.
How you doing, man? Good. I'm really good. I feel like I haven't been able to calibrate myself just from travel. I was in Edinburgh at the weekend. So Matt had his event Thursday, Friday, which is always cool for me because I've been to all of them bar the ones that he's done in Australia. So it's cool to sort of see the evolution of them. And it's a good reminder for me as well, because a lot of people come and talk to me about like what we do, about WeHack Health, and a lot of people talk to me about Phoenix, and I'm like, why was DDP there? So I'm like telling the story of like, how do I even fucking bring this? Like, how do I bring this down to like tell it as a story? So it's always good sort of like reminder as to how cool, because I think that we can often get caught up in the like, this is quote unquote normal or like day-to-day stuff for us in terms of the events and sort of what we're building. So it's good to sort of be able to explain it to other people and have those conversations. Cool as well to see the other coaches and see their progress as well. So it was a cool couple of days. It was a busy couple of days. But yeah, all is well, absolutely zero complaints. I went to train today and one of the biggest thoughts in my head recently was, and I don't know if you and I specifically spoke about this, but I've challenged myself this year that whenever things get more chaotic, so more travel, more work, more insert whatever the thing is, to double down on the stuff that I do for me, because it's easy to sack it off. I'll be like, I'll just go train tomorrow, or I'll do my cardio tomorrow, or I'll insert whatever the thing is and I'll do it tomorrow. So I'm like actively trying to get myself to do more of those things. So I look at my diary this morning and I was like, fucking hell, the amount of calls and like just stuff in there. I was like, I could really do with some time just getting caught up with work. But I went to the gym as a reminder of when I do those things, I can show up better for podcast calls, client calls, or whatever the thing is. So a good reminder of that this morning. But the thing actually that I want to talk about before we get into the actual topic today, this was sort of the narrative, and I have not prepped Dave for this in any stretch of the imagination. The narrative of a couple of days of Matt's event was having a with or without you mentality. And what I took from it specifically was, in this context of WeHack Health, we are going to continue to do this with or without anybody. Like, we will continue to do it with the people who have in it. Some will leave, that's fine. We will continue to build it, grow it, and whatever else. There is no direct impact to our lives, whether there are more or less people in the WeHack Health community, but there sure as shit is a direct impact for the people who are going to be a part of it. I thought it was a kind of interesting narrative, and actually I'm just off the weekly group call with Axe team, and I brought it up with them just to sort of see what their thoughts on it were. The analogy that I give, and I don't know if this is directly what, well, it kind of is, but I don't know if it's directly what they were sort of getting at whenever they were talking about it last week, but essentially, if you imagine this is an initial call, like a discovery call situation, and you've just told me, okay, right, I'm Dave, I want to lose all this weight, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, okay, right, well, this is the thing that I have that could help with that. We Hack Health. It's going to happen with or without you. So I'm going to continue to do it. People are going to continue to get results. We're going to continue to build it, have lifting camps, events, all the other things. You can be involved in it. This is how you do it, or you cannot. And either way is fine. I thought a kind of good narrative was like, came in the right way. It's a case of like, we don't need the people in it as much as the people need to be in it, if that makes sense. And I thought it was just an interesting narrative. So I brought it up on the call today, and Kevin straight away was like, I wasn't prepared. I literally just said all that stuff, and then he was like, I wasn't prepared for this. But the analogy that he gave was around the bus, essentially. Like, the bus is going, whether you are on it or not on it. And some people will be there to make the bus better. Some people will find a better route for the bus. Some people will be there to upgrade the bus. Some people need to get kicked off the bus. And it was an interesting, there's maybe 20 people on the call. And it was good just to sort of get their perspective on it. So you tell me what your thoughts are on with or without you mentality.
I think it's a good analogy, right? I mean, this train is moving forward. This bus is moving forward. And, you know, people will get off the bus. People will get on the bus. It's a community endeavor, right? And it's hitting in a certain, you know, North Star is how my CEO over Binary, Bob, likes to talk about, always, you know, trudging towards that North Star, right? And having kind of an aligned mission. And, you know, I think Hacking Your Health has evolved much more than the two of us, obviously, right?
Yeah.
It's all of the folks that are part of Hacking Your Health that make this community work and that support one another, that give new flares of motivation or different ideas or their experiences or perspectives that, you know, have definitely helped build, you know, what we have for our community here and continue to build, you know, on, right? And I think it's a great thing. Like, you're either on or off the bus. It doesn't matter. The bus is going to still go. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly that. And I think, you know, you nailed it there. It's like, I will always, always, always say it is about the community, but the community are the people on the bus. And I'm not ever taken away from them as the individuals, but the people who come on, they will contribute as much as they want to contribute. Some people contribute a lot more, as you know, some people contribute a lot less, which is all absolutely fine. But it's just about, it's funny, and obviously the conversation took a turn because at one point we were talking about how we can just spray paint up the side of the bus, that we've got crumble cookies, please come and join us. I was like, I don't really know if that's the right message to send. I get what you're saying, but not what we want to tell the general public. But it's just about understanding that this thing's happening. And if you want to be involved in it, come join us, because I'm having a lot of fun doing it. But it was the whole narrative of, I don't know if it was Matt's intention, but it was the whole narrative of the entire weekend. So it was cool to sort of see people's different thoughts on that.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, it sounds like a great, great event. And good to put things in perspective of like, hey, this isn't something that just shuts down and ends, right? It just continues to go. And mm-hmm. the people that you've impacted create new buses based off of Hacking Your Health and leave their own buses too, you know, which is a great thing. All part of that, mm-hmm. which I think is awesome.
Agree.
A real funny story. A quick shout out to my buddy Chris, who just sent me a text message saying, for some reason, I can't find my Xbox Series X that I brought to the store. I have no idea where it's at. He's like, never mind. My Jeep apparently can climb over Xbox X's because it was on my trunk of my car, and he drove over, and he's got a picture of his Xbox shattered over his Jeep. So, whoops-a-daisy.
Oops.
Whoops.
That bus went without him.
Yeah. And Chris listens to podcasts, which is great. So we'll get a kick out of that. But I just see a picture of this Xbox literally smashed by a Jeep. He's like, found the Xbox.
Worst ever.
Anyways, well,
right. You have a topic today.
I do. And, you know, I thought it was good to revisit some supplements, but a little bit of a spin because, you know, I see people a lot of times at the gym and they're sitting there sipping, you know, these little energy drinks right here that I have on my side here. And it's interesting because when you look at certain supplements, there are supplements that work all the time. And there are supplements that are timed, that you get certain potencies or its peak or its benefits, either pre or post workout or things like that. And so today I wanted to talk a little bit about timing of things and, you know, whether or not timing is an issue for some of these supplements or not. But I also wanted to talk about a new study that just came out for a supplement that I've been very familiar for a long time. And I take glutathione in general, but this is a little bit different. It's called GlyNAC. And GlyNAC is glycine and N-acetylcysteine, which is a combination of two. And what it is a combination of glycine and NAC, essentially, NAC. And what they found with taking high dosages of glycine and NAC, and these are, you know, randomized controlled human trials, which is really interesting. They did it in both younger and older individuals, and they found some insane results. That's really taking a lot of the folks in the medical industry that I follow, like Physionic and a lot, who are the other folks that I listen to? I'm trying to think. What's his name? Dr. Brad Stanfield, Dr. Attia. Like, there's some really good folks talking about the science behind this. And, you know, obviously they're always like, well, more research is needed. But this one seems to be pretty darn clear. By supplementing GlyNAC at any age, has some extreme benefits to your mitochondria production, i.e. aging, as well as brain and health cognitive function. And so I just want to read this letter. And this is from bcm.edu. And this is from Dr. Homa Slauchy. There we go. So here's the read here. As people get older, they aspire to live healthy lives as free as possible from the natural decline of cognitive abilities that occur with aging. At Baylor College of Medicine, researchers have been studying the biological underpinnings of age-associated cognitive decline and developing nutritional strategies to promote healthy brain aging. The report today on the Journal of Antioxidants, which, you know, is a really well-known publication, that supplements GlyNAC, a combination of glycine and N-acetylcysteine, or NAC, as precursors of a natural antioxidant glutathione, which I take glutathione twice a week intramuscular, which is great, you know, because I've been doing that for a long time, which means my health is going up, which is great. I knew this ahead of time. Improved or reversed age-associated cognitive decline in old mice and improved multiple associated defects in aging brains. We'll get to the human part in a second. The findings are consistent with the improvement observed after supplementing older adults with GlyNAC, as reported in 2021 pilot human trial. Therefore, the findings reported here are likely applicable to humans. And the one that I want to read here is from, so I just wanted to share that older study. Here's a newer one from IFL Science. Research have found that supplementing older people with GlyNAC, a combination of glycine and NAC, wards off several key indicators of aging and keeps people healthier as they age. Not only that, but older people also appear to be fitter and stronger with slimmer waistlines after taking GlyNAC supplements. As reported in the study, scientists at Baylor College of Medicine studied the effects of GlyNAC supplementation on 24 older adults and 12 younger people in a randomized double-blind human clinical trial. After 16 weeks, the GlyNAC supplementation was found to be associated with a host of benefits for key hallmarks of aging and age-associated defects. This included oxidation stress, glutathione deficiency, mitochondria dysfunction, esophageal inflammation, insulin resistance, endothelia dysfunction, genomic damage, stem cell fatigue, and cellular senescence. Meanwhile, no improvements were seen in those receiving the placebo. It turns out that the older people who received doses of GlyNAC acquired stronger muscles, lower blood pressure, and smaller waist measurements. They could exercise harder, and their walking speed improved, which is a surprisingly good indication of all ill health in old age. The research explained that the key GlyNAC benefits lies in the ability to restore the mitochondrial health in the correlation of oxidative stress. The mitochondria is the powerhouse of cells, as school textbooks like to say, generate most of the energy needed to fuel cells' biochemical reactions. As we age, however, they become less efficient at producing energy. Just as their previous mice studies have suggested, this clinical trial shows that GlyNAC supplementation appears to lift the mitochondrial function to older people to levels found in young people. That is a huge statement in many ways, just on the supplementation. And by the way, oral supplementation of GlyNAC, you know, so pills, able to supplement that and showed direct increases of replenishing glutathione levels within the body, as well as the mitochondrial function, again, increasing cognitive functionality, mitochondria production, you know, again, stronger muscle mass, which is always a great benefit, right? As well as
just needed to say that first, like more stronger muscle mass, sign me up.
Increases gains.
There we go. I'm in. Sign me up. Where would I get it?
So, you know, I have started actually supplementing more with GlyNAC orals, as well as my glutathione regimens. as a part of that, just based on the latest research. So just an FYI and some of the latest research there that I thought was really interesting and some really cool, you know, things that you can add to your protocol if you're interested in that.
Just ordering some right now.
The one that I like based on the dosages is from Nutri, Nutri Fusions.
Yep.
And that's that's the one I ended up using. It's dosage wise, it's got it's got 50 mcgs of selenium. But then it's got 1,050 milligrams of glycine and 100 milligrams of NAC. So pretty decent dosages for two capsules. You obviously, if you take four of those, you could double that, which appears to be what the study was using. So I'd probably go for four if you really want to maximize, but two be plenty efficient for what you're going to do there.
Cool. Add to basket. Yeah. So the thing you said initially, and I want to touch on that because it's something that frustrates me, that you see people in the gym and they're consuming energy drinks while they're training. Why does that frustrate you?
So specifically, caffeine has a 20 to 30 minute digestion window in your body to peak. Mm-hmm. So you typically want to take a pre-workout 30 minutes prior to your workout in order to have the energy benefits of the adenosine receptors being masked to give you that potency and that kick of caffeine to get your maximization of workouts. So if you're just sipping, you know, this throughout your workout, you're not going to feel the caffeine kick that you would prior to actually working out. In addition, there's a lot of other ingredients. It ranges based on the formulas of the pre-workouts. You know, some have alpha GPC, some have beta alanine, you know, some have L-citrulline. A lot of those take some time in your body to impact, like L-citrulline and beta-alanine, for example. So beta-alanine promoting oxygenation within your bloodstream. That's why you get the itches. You know, that takes relatively, you know, 15 minutes to peak within your body and then promote the oxygen, deployment within your cells. You know, you look at this one I'm using here, which is the Gorilla Minds. You know, tyrosine, again, probably 30 to 40 minutes. L-theanine, saffron extract, huperzine. I mean, these are going to take time to digest in your body. So if you want the benefits of taking a pre-workout, you know, take it prior to. And most pre-workouts have usually kind of a few different stages of caffeine. So they have the fast-releasing caffeine, which will hit within 20 to 30 minutes. And then they have an extended caffeine, which means you have, you know, kind of masks the adenosine receptors or the adenosine within your body to still, you know, give you that feeling of energy. Again, caffeine doesn't actually increase energy. It masks, you know, your body's sluggishness and tiredness, you know, based on its circadian rhythm. But the delayed is doesn't hit you right away and hits you a little bit later so that you don't get the caffeine crashes that you would typically get with high volumes of caffeine. So if you want to time your things appropriately, you know, creatine, for example, is a good discussion. Creatine, you know, some people say, you know, take it, you know, intro workout. Some say take it pre-workout, some say post. There doesn't seem to be any correlation whatsoever, pre-intro or post. Taking creatine anytime seems to be effective. Because you basically what you're doing in your body with creatine is you're building up your creatine stores in your body, which is what you typically do with like a loading phase. So if you have 20 grams of creatine a day for a week, you now have maximum levels of creatine your body can then take away from to use at any time. So it doesn't matter if you do intra or post, you're not going to be depleting or adding or changing any benefits of that. And
the goal with creatine is to keep your stores elevated at all times. You're not using it specifically
with creatine, right? You know, you can't be like on and off with it because then you're dropping those levels of creatine. It takes a while to build up the maximum level of stores to be able to maintain that, which is why, you know, you can take 5 grams of creatine every day and within a month you'll be at that level of being able to maintain, or you can do a loading phase of 20 grams. So, you know, usually that's usually 4 scoops because usually each gram is going to be 5 grams per scoop.
Which is actually something I've never checked. Like, I've just always assumed. Like, I've never weighed the scoop either. Like, I mean, I've used creatine for 10 days. I actually just got some today. I picked it up in the gym because I ran
it out.
I was like, I just have an assumption that the scoop is enough. Never even read the fucking label.
If you take it enough, it's gonna keep up with the stores. But again, trying to take it, you know, 20 to 30 minutes pre-workout will definitely help. Same thing for like food, for example. So there's actually some interesting studies that Dr. Lane Norton just did a paper on, which I thought was good. So I've always talked about working out fasted. So for cardio, I prefer fasted workouts. I don't like having anything in my stomach because I'm bobbling around and you know, they get that feeling of everything. But I've become very, very focused on eating prior to any lift whatsoever, even if it's in the morning. And the reasons for that is supplemental storage of glycogen to replenish your muscles as you're going through and doing your workouts, to be able to maximize muscle rebuild and muscle recovery and muscle growth. And so there are some good data studies on there that eating, you know, some sort of meal beforehand does have an impact on how much muscle you build post-workout and how intense the workout can be based on energy levels. So I would recommend if you're doing a lifting session, you know, a resistance training, that you eat something that is carb-centric prior to a workout. Now, there's different ways of looking at that. So if you're doing complex carbs, typically like an hour beforehand, right? Or longer, hour and a half could be good. If you're doing simple carbohydrates, like the staple Cocoa Pebbles, Cocoa Puffs, prior to that,
the good stuff.
The good stuff, 15 to 30 minutes prior to workout tends to be it. I actually put my CGM on to see when my glucose spiked, which would obviously, you know, hit an insulin response, which then would transport the sugars to the rest of my body as it's needed. And it took about 15 minutes for my insulin to actually go and spike, which was, you know, about what I would expect to, but digestion could be, you know, varying based on individual and person. But, you know, those can help out with your routines. So if you're finding that you have low energy levels on a fasted stomach, or you're not getting enough gains, you know, in the gym, you know, eating pre-workout may be a good option for you, especially something like, you know, Cocoa Pebbles or something sugary, that can really help with the glycogen replenishment as you're going working out and getting you more of a maximum effect.
Alexi, and this is a total tangent and we'll throw you right off by what I'm about to say. One of the speakers at Matt's event was talking about female hormones in the menstrual cycle. And she was talking about how females, whenever it's the time of their period, they crave carbohydrates. And obviously it's a craving due to craving the energy rather than the actual thing that itself. But one thing that she was talking about was you're in the week of your period, and I'm more than open for every female to give me shit about this because I have obviously never had a period. Yes. In the week of your period, you're blood sugars are elevated. So although you will be craving carbs, it's not the thing that you should consume because that's obviously going to take it and elevate it that even more. And it's not going to fix the problem because it's going to give you that like spike and then crash once again. So things that you should focus on are high protein and fats. Now, I realize that that's very easy for me to say. I'm not ever in that situation, but I find it interesting in terms of the blood glucose being spiked at that period of time. It's not something that I knew. So there you go.
That's interesting. In fact, you know, what I found absolutely astonishing about women periods in general is that the body is, it's just absolutely fascinating. The more I learn about the body and how absolutely friggin' amazing we are as just, I mean, just insane. Like the immune system we've talked about before on the podcast, so there's varying stages and we have like a polymorphic immune system that, you know, adapts to new things that are coming into it. I mean, the evolution we have in our bodies and the way that our bodies are crafted are just absolutely fascinating, incredible. What I thought was really neat, well, one, you know, they often say like, you know, women that become friends, they start to share the same menstrual cycle, which is really interesting just by, you know, being around each other and the pheromones and everything else that go around that. Right. And what I thought was really interesting about women periods is that women that are losing substantial amount of weight will start to have irregular or no cycles at all because their body isn't in a prime position to have children because you're losing weight, right? So you're losing weight. You're shedding the fat stores that you would typically use for energy for that baby. Therefore, your body says, hey, you must be going through a period of time that's tough, you know, so we're not going to, you know, try to have kids at this point in time because, you know, the ideal position isn't right for your body. I mean, just think about that. Like your body knows that it's losing weight. So it sends a signal saying, hey, no kids right now because, you know, it's not a good time. You know, your chances of survival are going to substantially go down based on, you know, obviously thousands and thousands of years ago when we, you know, we're hunting for food and we have, you know, periods where we wouldn't eat for weeks or months and things like that, where times were tough, droughts, et cetera. Your survival chances go up when obviously you're not pregnant and you don't have a lot of food. And, you know, your survival chances for the species, you know, continuing increases when you have a surplus of food. So it's just, you know, the more you learn about these timing things and your body, it's just, to me, it just gets super fascinating.
I mean, it's a fucking endless rabbit hole, but that is an extreme level of what we've spoken about before. Like whenever you're are deep in a cut and your body stops doing the things that it doesn't actually need to do. So it's like an extreme level of the parasympathetic and sympathetic nervous system, or rest and digest versus fight or flight. So again, if you imagine, and I've seen this time and time again, and back when I used to coach majority females, like I've had clients come to me in the past being like, they haven't had a period in insert however many years or whatever. And it could simply just be that they just weren't eating enough food. Like they weren't actually consuming enough food to allow that to be a thing in their body, like to allow that to be a process in their body, because the body was focused on things that it actually needed to survive. And obviously reproduction isn't something that it needs to survive in that moment. One other thing, and now that we've taken a tangent to talk about periods, whenever we look at like macronutrient breakdown, we look at protein as essential and fats as essential, more so fats in females. So obviously you and I talk about all the time how we prefer a low fat diet, and high protein and high carbs. Fats are more essential for females for that sort of hormone production as well, and to sort of regulate that cycle as much as possible. So it's not very often that I would, it's not very often, not never, but not very often that I would ask a female client to go on a lower fat diet, because I want to sort of obviously regulate your hormones as much as possible within that.
Yeah. And by the way, this goes for men as well. So what's interesting about fasted and eating some but losing weight, so in a fasted state, it's been shown that your body actually goes into overdrive, getting rid of free radicals, like cleaning up your whole system, your nootropic sense of it. So people that typically fast for, you know, above 24 hours, 24 to 48 hours or longer, they notice a sense of mental clarity and drive to go and do something, as well as energy levels start to increase. Now, why would our bodies want to do that? Well, if you're starving and you're about to die, does it make sense to drop your energy levels, drop your cognitive function, your chance of survival drop, right? So our bodies go into high gear and say, hey, we need to kick it in gear so that we can get some food in here so we don't die. So everything starts to amplify. However, if we're still getting food and we're dropping weight slowly, our bodies fight us on that. And everybody's like, hey, I know you got food there. You should be eating some more. If not, I'm going to make you feel like shit. So, you know, you start to drop down in your energy levels. You start to drop down in your cognitive function, and your body actually fights you on every capacity for the level of energy. So you start to like get tired more often. You might not be as functional, like may bounce less. Your body basically goes into, you know, power reserve mode, you know, your battery saver mode, so that your battery can last longer on the food that you have. It's an interesting regulation of energy that we have in our bodies that, you know, again, I just find really fascinating that it applies obviously to men and women, that we start to go in these different phases. So, you know, when you're trying to lose weight, that's why I like the whole balance of trying to build muscle mass, because you burn more calories, dropping of fat, and your body doesn't fight you as much on that, right? And you can still eat and maintain kind of the same level of calories, just in a slight deficit or slight surplus. You're not like dropping down 2,000 calories and only eating 400 calories a day. You know, maybe your total daily energy expenditure is 2,000 or 1,800. Maybe you drop down to, you know, 200 calories per that for a week, which, you know, equates to X amount. But your body doesn't notice those big of differences as much as it does a 1,000 calorie deficit per day, right? So it's these drastic shifts that we see in these diets and everything else that really causes folks to really, really fail at it, because they just feel like total shit every day. Their motivation drops down. They feel horrible. Like, of course, I wouldn't want to do that, right? So all moderations in all these areas, and same thing for, you know, supplementation. Like, I'm not a big advocate of taking a bunch of pills, right? I've gone to my extremes on both ends, right? No pills to like fucking 50 pills a day, you know? And what I can tell you is that, you know, subtle differences, if any, in most of them, but there are some staple ones. So for example, calcium and vitamin D have shown a substantial reduction in cancer. So if you're just by taking vitamin D and calcium, typically, and again, you don't want to do high doses of calcium, but, you know, those two specifically seem to ward off most cancers. Now, I'm not going to say you're not going to get cancer, but your chances and probability go down. Vitamin D also has a lot of, it's like vitamin D, we talked about this before, is more of a hormone than it is anything else. that our bodies use, and it's extremely important. So everything from, you know, immunity, our immune system, to cardiovascular health, like it's an important supplement that we should be supplementing. Now, I realized I was taking way too much. So my last blood work's like, hey, your vitamin D is like astronomically off the charts. I'm like, ah, that's probably why I feel like shit right now. Okay. So I was taking 20,000 IU a day, and I dropped that down to 5,000, doing much better now. So, you know, just be careful how much you take of certain things too.
It's not always a case of more is better. Not correct. Sometimes, yes. America, yes, but not everything.
That's right. That's right. Also, omega-3 fatty acids, another staple supplement. Like everybody, in my opinion, in this entire world should be taking omega-3 fatty acids.
And agree. Vitamin D. Agree.
Like, period.
I agree.
Those two are the most important.
Yep.
I do want to dispel some things on creatine, because like I get a text message every day from my son, and you know, my son's using creatine, and he's like, Dad, everybody's telling me it's gonna damage my kidneys. I'm like, listen, it's not gonna damage your kidneys. Okay. The American Kidney Association, that is the staple, says it's not gonna damage your kidneys. However, it does say, you know, your levels of when you get your blood work done are going to be off, because the creatinine release into your body and the bun ratios are going to be skewed based on the blood work. Okay. So it's going to look like you have some kidney damage, but it doesn't affect that because the results are skewed. Now, more of a cysteine check within your kidneys is most important. So again, creatine is not going to impact your kidneys. Now, people with kidney disease that are already having issues with filtering within their kidneys, yes. Okay. You know, you probably don't want to load up with creatine. I'd advise, you know, talk to your doctor about it. But I do know a lot of folks that do take creatine that are that have kidney issues that don't take creatine, because it does negatively impact them. But it's also, does it really, or is it just impacting their levels based on the blood work? You don't really know. There hasn't been a lot of data showing negative impact on kidneys per anything. It's creatine is the most studied supplement. In fact, they're not even doing any more studies on it, because there's just been so many of them that it's like literally the best data we have. It's like it's probably better than protein, to be honest with you, as many studies we have on creatine. And it does increase recovery. It does increase your ability to put on muscle mass, you know, estimated between 12 to 14% increase in muscle mass based off of creatine supplementation. In addition to the cognitive benefits, your body will use creatine. Your brain will use creatine as energy. It's a very easy energy source for your brain to use as energy. So it will immediately use that to boost your energy production in your brain, which again, all sounds amazing to me, right? Now, the big issue a lot of people say is, well, it's going to add on water weight. You're not going to notice the water weight. By the way, water weight in your muscles is a damn good thing. That's what you want in your muscles, right? So don't worry about the water weight. The water weight is what you want for your muscles to recover, to build stronger, to build much more faster. Like, you want that water weight as you're going out. Now, if you're trying to do a bodybuilding show and you got to get down to like sub 5% body fat, maybe a little milk in those.
I would say, no, I'm gonna chip in on this. Like, I think you can still maintain the creatine like right to the end, because it is intramuscular. So I've seen Callum and like the people who are actually professionals at the bodybuilding stuff post about this, that you can maintain your creatine dosage right up the end because it is intramuscular. And if anything, it's going to make you look better, because your muscles will look fuller against the leaner physique. So yep. Keep it creatine in, kids.
Creatine it is.
Creatine. We need to recreate that Taco Bell ad. Creatine. I like creatine too. Creatine.
Well, other than that, I mean, those are the staple supplements that I recommend for most folks, because listen, you can supplement on a lot of things. You know, there's you know, rapamycin, Sirmolis is the name brand for it. Rapamycin is looking really promising from a mTOR production perspective. Seems to increase longevity and lifespan, at least it has in the mice studies and in the human studies that are coming out. So rapamycin is prescription based anti-aging components, but again, a lot more research needs to be, I think, put onto that. There's obviously, like, you know, peptides and things like that. Again, you know, we can go down a whole rabbit hole of discussions here. The most, you know, thing to understand is supplement for what you need. You don't need a supplement for things that you don't need, but as a staple, vitamin D and omega-3 fatty acids, and I'd probably say probably now GLYNAC are the three that I would probably recommend the most heavily. And creatine, obviously number four, would be the four things that I would heavily recommend for most folks.
Yeah, and I would say, like, I don't like going down the rabbit hole of the supplements conversation too much, because people think if they take the supplements, that it. These are things that I would take regardless. So the other things that I would say, like, you know, pre-workout, for example, like, you want to get your shit together before you start taking pre-workout. It's not like, okay, first day in the gym, I need to lose 100 pounds. What pre-workout do I need? That's not what you're looking at. I do think the things like creatine, vitamin D, fish oils are definitely things that you should be taking regardless of where you're at and what's going on.
Yep. Fully agree.
Agree.
Well, that's this podcast. That was a good one.
Yep. Get better at these.
No, we switched through a little quicker than normal, but we both have meetings here at 1 o'clock. So
there you go. Tune in next week for more.
It wasn't the 25-minute podcast like last time, though. I'll say that.
We got met in the middle. We met in the middle of it. And now we're just going to free ball here for another 15 minutes.
That's right.
Right. Well, hey, thanks for listening. Appreciate you listening. Sure. See you on WeHack Health on all social media platforms and catch you next week.
Later.